The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.
I'm prepared to end this in my cap.
Well, do it then.
Come see again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should there be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Yeah, welcome along to the football show. There is a Kenny Loving on the text machine this evening. Got to say, lads, great having Kenny back on the radio, says Graeme. The worst thing is, Graeme, he doesn't care. He's nonplussed by that.
Oh, no, that's harsh, Joe. That's harsh.
He couldn't care less, Graeme.
No. I don't crave it, obviously, but it's a nice thing for people to say.
Yeah, okay. So,
but I don't linger on it.
So look, we've a lot to get through, and I would think developing story this evening at Old Trafford, realistically, given where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is at the moment. They are 2-0 down to Atalanta, 46 minutes on the clock. You would say if the next 45 minutes don't go especially well with Liverpool looming on Sunday, then the pressure just gets ratcheted up again on Solskjaer. How bad do you think it would have to get for Solskjaer to get the bullet here, realistically?
I think it'd literally need to fall asunder. I think he'd have to lose the dressing room. I think that has to become pretty obvious. I think individual players would have to let it be known that they're not happy with the situation, etc. You know, results would have to fall off a cliff. I think all of it, like a perfect storm almost, to get rid of him, because I genuinely feel he's in a reasonably safe place. I don't think there's an appetite there amongst the hierarchy of Manchester United to show him the door. So I actually think it needs to be pretty extreme, Joe, and it's not going to happen off the back of a defeat tonight.
What's his biggest issue? I would put it to you, it's Ronaldo.
I wouldn't go that far, to be honest with you, because even if Ronaldo hadn't come through the door at the football club this year, I still feel as if they're short. I mean, Manchester United need to be competing at the top end. Sorry, Joe, just watching, great chance there for Ronaldo. You would have expected him to score. Picked up a great position there, was played in, goalkeeper to beat. Had to shift his feet really quickly, but just hit the shot straight at the goalkeeper. Unfortunately, you would have expected him to find the corner net. United win it back. I think it's Bruno was a plays in behind. Decent enough first touch, just doesn't find the corners. Very unlike him. That's exactly where you want him, Joe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Receiving the ball just inside the box, hits it straight at the goalkeeper.
He's gnashing his teeth in frustration. No, he should score there. I understand what you're saying about the central midfield issue, and that is absolutely an issue and has been. But Ronaldo now has exacerbated a few problems for Manchester United, which I want to get your thoughts on. So, for instance, and how they compile these statistics, I don't know exactly, but just work with me, because I'd say there is a general truth behind them. So pressing actions per 90 minutes. Minutes is how it's billed in Premier League terms thus far in the season. Top of the table for pressing per 90 minutes, Wilfred Zaha makes 20 pressing efforts per game. Diogo Jota doing very well on 19.8. Somebody like Aubameyang, he's at 14 per the 90 minutes. Salah, when he's not busy scoring worldy after worldy, is at 12. Mane 10.5. Bottom, last in the table, Ronaldo, 2.7 times a game he'll think about trotting towards the goalkeeper and doing a bit. So the question I have for you then is, when you have Ronaldo as the figurehead of a press, that pressing game cannot work. It does not work. Manchester United are not an effective pressing team. So therefore, what are they out of possession? What are they trying to do out of possession? Because I don't really understand it. And I've watched pretty much all their games. I happened to watch the Villarreal game back earlier on this morning. And the only time they pressed in that game was on two or three occasions where the crowd got in their backs and they thought, oh God, we better do it here. Against Leicester, far too easy to play through. And again, I know that's bigger than Ronaldo. But just that starting point when United don't have the ball. I mean, the original sin there is that you have Ronaldo who's not going to contribute on that front. So it means United have to totally rethink how they go about playing against a team without the ball. So you'd have a keen sense of the tactics and the possibilities here, because that for me is one of their biggest issues.
Yeah, exactly, and that's easily solved, isn't it, when Cavani comes into the team. So you're talking somebody totally different who actually probably has the juice in his legs to go and do that, and maybe has the drive, the kind of mentality to a certain extent. Don't be too overly critical of Ronaldo in that respect, and he's got a real good understanding as well, almost like a defensive mindset. is sometimes you feel with Cavani, although he's a centre forward, when he's out possession of the ball, you know, when he needs to press, how he needs to go and press as well. So that's the other end of the spectrum, isn't it, with Cavani? And when Cavani signed that year contract at Manchester United, persuaded him to stay. And even when Sancho came to the football club, I liked the balance in the forward areas of the pitch then for United. Because as you know, Joe, I'm a huge fan of Greenwood, massive. I think he could be the best of the lot. I think he's an absolutely outstanding talent. And for me, I'd like to see, can he evolve into a centre forward, number nine? I think he's got the potential to do that. So with Cavani staying for next year, I saw predominantly as well, this is going to help Greenwood because he'll get his game time operating off the right of a three, but he'll also come in and play a fair quota of the games as a number nine. Cavani won't play every game. Greenwood will come in and play maybe 10-15 games as a central striker and develop his game, and maybe by the end of the season we'll know if he's the solution for Manchester United as their number nine for the next kind of 10 years.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it early on, with kind of even with Sancho coming to the football club,
and I think that's how Solskjaer saw it too. And then yeah. Rio gets involved, Fergie gets involved. Here you are, here's Ronaldo.
You're pushing that Rio one. How's that? I missed that one. Is that
Rio's
that
pushing
top,
that one? Oh, Rio. Oh,
Rio's saying he's oh. the middleman.
Rio, I was on the phone to him. We were at it all hours. Got it sorted. Me and Cristiano had a good talk. Oh, Rio. You wouldn't believe Rio on his podcast. It was a Rio Ferdinand signing, then right. Manchester United second. But so Ronaldo splashes in there. Great start against Newcastle. You know, everything's wonderful. But it has created an issue now. So suddenly Cavani probably kicking his heels. Greenwood getting virtually no time through the middle. And there's the pressing issue, as in they're not pressing. And the problem for Solskjaer is, so here's the question. I mean, it's all very well me saying this. If I was Solskjaer, would I feel brave enough to take Ronaldo out of the team? Not sure I would in his position. That's a tricky bomb to try and detonate.
No, exactly. And that's the problem you've brought into the dressing room. And I don't think that's easy to manage for like an experienced manager. You'd like to say maybe the more experienced, maybe stronger managers, you put the team first. It's all about the combinations on the pitch, the kind of cohesion to your play. So that's how you make your judgment. No surprise there, United have scored.
It's Rashford for Manchester United. He's missed a few chances, Rashford, and could be accused of not tracking back for the first goal. But on 52 minutes, he's finished very well there, Kenny. You might describe it. He ran in behind. There has been space in behind. Fernandez looks to have played the pass, and he opened out his body well and finished in the far corner well.
But he's done that well on a couple of occasions. He's very effective operating off that left-hand side, Rashford always has. And I've got him a huge fan of him because he's actually developed and he's really kind of started an orthodox number nine as United, didn't he? And it got pushed out to the left-hand side, but he's really learned the position. And a couple of times in the first half, he made that great run, not a little diagonal run from outside left onto the inside, into the space in behind. He actually did get in twice. Demiral, a brilliant last-ditch tackle, and he clipped the crossbar, didn't he,
yeah.
At the end of the first half. Again, this was a little bit more simplistic, to be honest with you. Atlanta holding that kind of high line, the space was inside. Bruno, which he's done a couple of times, picked the pass, just side foot into the space in behind, and he was away down that inside left channel and showed a little bit more quality there on his finish that he had done in the first half, just stroked it into the far corner. But I cut him a bit of slack, Rashford. He's coming back from a serious enough injury,
yeah.
Joe. He hasn't had too many minutes on the pitch, so I think there's a little bit of ring rustiness there in terms of certainly the quality of his finishing. So it certainly could cut him a bit of slack, and good to see him actually get on the score sheet there, because even a 2-0, probably didn't say when we first came on, I still feel as if United are still in this game. I know they've got the goal now, and that's a pretty obvious thing to say. But even a 2-0, just the nature of this team that they're playing against, and even the quality which they do have on the pitch. We're talking about the kind of cohesion of the team, but the individual quality which they have, any kind of little bit of combination play that United can put together, you feel as if they can get in. So yeah, this is really game on. 2-1, they're still very much in the game.
To be fair, we didn't state either, and it's because we got into the Ronaldo discussion, which is a bigger discussion. We didn't state that after Atalanta's first goal in particular, it was probably a very good 15 minutes for Manchester United, and then they concede from a corner, and that's a hammer blow. So it wasn't like maybe the Villarreal game, for instance, where Villarreal were creating a lot and probably the better side. United probably did have the better of it even after conceding the first goal.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like I said, no, there's been some decent combination play. Bruno and Ronaldo, some talk before when Ronaldo got there in terms of can these two play together, they all want to pass to each other. I think it was quite ridiculous, to be honest with you. And very quickly you could sense, you know, good players, clever operators can play together.
Weirdly, at Portugal it hadn't been the happiest looking marriage, but it's been fine.
Yeah, no, it's been absolutely fine. All I would say though, with them two together, I feel as if, because we've even seen it tonight sometimes with Ronaldo coming, dropping off the front now, little bit more reluctant to constantly running those channels in behind. He wants to drop in deep and get the ball into the pockets. Now, when that usually happens, when you're playing with a 10 just in behind, which Bruno Fernandes is, generally that should be the trigger for that number 10 at times, just to run in behind, just head down and run 20 yards straight line in behind. Just so there's a bit of yin and yang there. You don't want Bruno and Ronaldo dropping into the pocket. Somebody's got to attack that space in behind. And I always feel maybe just in term, even the likes of Lingard there on the bench tonight for me, you know, people would say Lingard or Bruno, that's a,
no-brainer.
Not even an argument who goes in team. But I just think Lingard's qualities, when Ronaldo drops into those pockets and spaces open up in behind, he's a player who can dart from those little pockets in behind, down the sides and in behind very quickly. He's quick off the ground, isn't he, Lingard?
Yeah.
And he's good. I trust him in front of goal as well. He's come up with some important goals for United so far this season. But at the moment, they're in a decent position, like in this game. Ronaldo's just forward one wide there from a free. But those underlying problems are still going to be there, despite what happens in the second half of this game.
So can I ask you a question then? Say, for instance, and I know we were just chatting off air, and you wouldn't play Ronaldo. But say there's the politics of the situation and Solskjaer feels, got to play Ronaldo. So Ronaldo's in the team. For United then, do they need to just accept, we're not going to be a pressing team, we need to get back in a 4-5-1, Cristiano trots around as the one, and the 4 and the 5 are very tight together, very compact, probably a bit deeper than, I don't know, you might ideally like, and you go from there. Is that the only way to compensate for Ronaldo?
It's partly. It's not. You don't do one or the other for 90 minutes, do you? We're going to press for 90.
A shape that they go to.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's an argument then. Because no point committing players high up the pitch if you're carrying one player, Ronaldo. Then you're going to get passed around. The high press isn't going to work. It's going to play through you. And you're going to find yourself exposed. Because let's be honest, it's not as if United had two world-class centre-halves who you can say, go and play 1v1 for 90 minutes. We trust you. You can do that with Varane to an extent. But you certainly can't do it with Harry Maguire. You can't leave him exposed to kind of counter-attacks too often, 1v1 situations. So yeah, I think there's at times really with Ronaldo in the team, if you're looking at it, I think, well, how are we going to manage this, our possession? Well, there's an argument for taking a step back. And when Solskjaer came into the club, United was probably one of the strongest aspects of their game in terms of their counter-attacking game. Well, that's when Lukaku was still at the club and he had the likes of Rashford, Martial, real kind of pace on the team to hurt teams on the counter-attack. Now, Ronaldo's not going to do that if he operates a little bit deeper down the pitch. But certainly your two wide men, the likes of Greenwood, Rashford, Martial, Sancho, players like this can break very quickly, potentially even maybe one player from the central midfield early. McTominay, for example, for me, is someone who could get up the pitch very quickly, 40, 50 yards, if you ask him to do that from a deeper position. So these are all the things I'm sure he's thinking about and he's kind of talking with his coaching staff. But it's all because of that, isn't it? It's all because of the presence of Cristiano Ronaldo high up the pitch. This is how you have to modify your game.
You're working back from that.
Yeah, these are the small adjustments that you have to make to your game, I think, in not only in possession, but out of possession as well.
Okay, very interesting. And is there, say he was to go to some kind of 4-5-1 out of possession type shape, as we're talking about, and you're saying you need pace out wide, is there room for Pogba in that kind of a lineup?
I think there is. I mean, Pogba plays every game for me in that kind of midfield, because he just gives that creative element. He kind of links the defensive line to the front. He's that kind of conduit. He can receive the ball in any area of the pitch under pressure. Generally, he's positive with his passing.
But if Pogba's in, and you would think, I take your point on Lingard, but I think realistically Bruno's in. So then you've got, say, one of Fred or McTominay. Let's pick McTominay. So your midfield three there in that 4-5-1 is McTominay, Fred and Pogba. Now, I'm already feeling a bit sorry for McTominay.
No, so I've probably said it for quite some time. It hasn't really changed, even with the signings that they've made. For me, if I had to take a pick, I'd choose McTominay, just because of the fact, bit of physicality, pace, that kind of athleticism which he has. I'd plant him as that holding number six. And I play Pogba and Bruno ahead of them as two number eights, right-sided eight.
That'd be okay.
Left-sided, yeah. I'm not a massive fan of Pogba when he drops into an orthodox midfield too, because I still think Pogba, when he gets to within 25 yards of the opposition goal, he can hurt teams. He can shoot left, right foot. He's a clever operator in terms of his combination 1-2s, the edge of the box. And he can actually get on the end of crosses into the box. When crosses are put in there, he's got the ability to step into the box and get his head on things. So I actually like to see Pogba operate 20 yards higher up the pitch. So you got that kind of inverted triangle, haven't you? You got the holding number six and the two number eights. Now, people say, well, out of possession, That's not the most offensively secure. I don't think Fred and McTominay are the most offensively secure when they're operating as a two, because they haven't got that know-it-all, that kind of defensive noose that you need either. So I just think, for me, it's United as an attacking threat. Get your best combinations on the pitch in those central midfield and higher up the pitch. And almost to an extent, you're looking to outscore every team that you're playing against. That's basically how you're setting up to play.
We'll have to see how this develops over the next half hour, obviously, and the result may change the mood Manchester United have about themselves when Sunday comes around and Liverpool are at Old Trafford. Atletico 2, Liverpool 3 last night. Jurgen Klopp called it a dirty 3 points, Kenny. I'm sure you've had a few dirty 3 points yourself in your time. Very satisfying types, I'm sure. This is probably an unfair point to go with, actually, to lead with, because Liverpool are flying, and this same point could apply to both teams. But certainly one of the takeaways from last night is that Liverpool looked a touch vulnerable at the back. Now, admittedly, they're playing against a brilliant Atletico side and they're in Madrid, so you're going to give up chances. But are they a touch vulnerable at the back? Van Dijk is back in the team, Matip back in the team. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, I don't think it's just the defensive line, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't really look into much at stats. I just kind of trust my eyes in terms of what I'm seeing on the pitch. But just get a sense that they conceded, not maybe goals so much, but opportunities. They've given up far too many opportunities so far this season.
Not just last night.
No, not just last night. So people point to Van Dijk, and I think there's a fair argument there in terms of, coming back from that serious injury. I mean, I never suffered that cruciate ligament injury, to be honest with you. The nearest I had was like a reasonably bad median ligament injury, kept me out for 3 or 4 months. But I do remember coming back not having that kind of confidence in terms of my movement. So in terms of planting your foot, planting that kind of so-called weaker foot, whether it's left or right, and then extending yourself in the opposite direction, you feel as if you haven't got the confidence to do even kind of block tackles, anything like that. You're really at kind of 60 to 70%.
Where it'll go again.
That can take. Yeah, exactly. You just don't trust. You haven't got the confidence. It needs that big block tackle, or it needs something like that to happen on the pitch, and you need to come through it 2 and 3 times for to gain that confidence. So just get a sense of that with Van Dijk at the moment. I know he kind of strolls through games at the best of times. Don't get me wrong. But certainly he's looked a little bit more vulnerable to start the season than he has done previously. I remember an incident against Manchester City at Anfield a couple of weeks ago. Bernardo Silva went on a jinky little run inside the Liverpool half, and he dropped his shoulder on a few people, and Van Dijk stepped out. Now, Van Dijk steps out, you usually forget it. It's all over. He takes the ball off you, or he forces you in the opposite direction. But Bernardo Silva, he put him on his backside, he dropped his shoulder, he lost his foot and his balance, and he nearly went down. So even small things like that, the goal last night, the Griezmann's goal, his movement in terms of how he turned his back on the player, but it wasn't there, that real kind of dynamic movement.
It's a touch laboured.
It was, exactly. So I think it's that. It's more of a mental thing, really, in terms of he just doesn't trust his body at the moment to be able to react as quickly as he wants. But hopefully that'll come over time. So I wouldn't be overly worried about that.
No, fair enough. The Griezmann red card.
No, I think it's fair in the modern climate, how the game is refereed. It is. Have a huge amount of sympathy for him. Ball coming over your head. You got your eyes on the ball. You don't know what's behind you. But I think a counter argument that would be, look, you're in the area of the pitch. You should expect there's going to be players around you. Right. It's not as if you're running down the channel that every other player's up the other end of the pitch. And you pretty much know there's nobody behind me here. You're turning into an area of the pitch where you would expect there to be opposition players, even your own teammates. So I suppose that would be the counter argument. You've got to recognise that. And you've got to, prepare yourself, probably to the extent where you can't actually put your foot in the air. You have to check the players around you, maybe even give up possession at times. And that's a hard thing to do, because football's an instinctive game. You just kind of react to things like that. So a lot of sympathy for him, but I think, as the game is refereed today, and even as the laws are applied today, I think it probably was a red card.
Because I remember, I'm sure you do too, Manchester United. It reminded me of Nani being sent off for Manchester United against Real Madrid a couple of years ago, where like that ball was played over his head and he was sticking his foot out to control it. He was watching the ball come over his head, and then Arbeloa is there and foot goes into him and he gets the red card, and Manchester United knocked out of the European Cup. And this was back 2013. And that was like one where, again, people thought, well, is that not just sort of allowed that you're trying to control the ball? Yeah. And
that's a tough one,
it's really.
Very
tough one, yeah.
But you've got to but this is how the game is changing. You have to evolve as a player. It's like the classic, going to ground, making a tackle. I got the ball first, but you've nearly broken the player in two with your follow through, the intensity of the tackle, and that's taking a long time for that penny to drop with players. Players will still make the argument. Now you'll hear first. Players, "What got the ball? What are you doing?" So, but you have to digest that. This is how the game is changing. You have to tailor your game accordingly. You have to be smart.
I got the ball first rule changing is probably fair enough because people took liberties with that rule. There was the old get the ball and then unleash hell. To be fair with the Griezmann one and say the Nani one, for example, similar enough types of situations, I almost think they're so natural and they happen almost so rarely, they don't need to be legislated against. They should sort of be allowed and taken as a football moment. Like I would have said, I understand the referee is probably right to give the red card. I don't think football should go that way with that moment. I think the ball first and then destroying a fella, that needed to be clamped down on because that was happening too often. But a moment like this, it doesn't happen that often. It's really rare you do catch someone in the face. And if the ball's not there to be controlled, it's not like Griezmann is going to go around throwing his foot up in the air. So I actually think football should almost just say certain things are going to happen out there and let's be fair. Like, let's understand a real footballing moment.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Probably halfway Harry there on that occasion in terms of, giving the free kick last night and maybe giving the yellow card.
Yeah, totally fine.
I was a shame really because I was really enjoying I missed a bit of the first half. I told you, came in late in the first half. But I think that second half was really set up. Both sides fancied their chances in that second half and it was really kind of similar. I was really looking forward to it. And as soon as the sending off happened, you knew what was going to happen. The game became fragile. They had to slow the game up. They had to employ their taxes, which they did. I thought the game suffered as a spectacle because of it. So that was a shame. But great result for Liverpool. All in all, it wasn't perfect. You're talking about defensively, even kind of like 10 minutes to go, Joe Gomez coming on for Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I mean, even a substitution like that. I mean, if I played right back for a lot of my career, centre half and right back. But if ever during the game as a right back, we're in a situation where we're defending the lead. The game's in the balance. Maybe we're defending the lead. We're kind of hanging on a bit. And I looked over to the touchline as a right back and my manager's decision was, you're coming off. I need you off now. We've got to defend now for the last 10 minutes. So I need you on the bench, not on the pitch. That for me would have been the biggest insult of all time.
If there's one thing manager, it's defend. Give me a break.
Yeah, so even the fact that he's prepared to do that with Trent, that an indicator of how he feels about Trent, as good a player as he is, a fantastic footballer, probably the best attacking right back in the modern game.
Yeah.
But when a manager makes a decision like that, that tells you something as well. You've got a fullback now in the team who potentially at times you can't trust in terms of the quality of his defending at times. So all of those small little things, you could dissect the two goals again in terms of Liverpool conceded and Naby Keita as well.
Yes.
We've spoken about him before about in terms of the legs and the energy which he brings to the team, which I think he does. I mean, that goal he got last night was almost like a replica of the goal against was AC Milan. Ball just dropping out of the sky, volley at the edge of the box. Brilliant. But that's all well and good, having those kind of energy levels and dynamism which I'm talking about and that goal threat which he's shown. But you still got to do the basics. We're talking about Fred here, McTominay, just doing the basics in central midfield. Well, he didn't do it the other night. 1v1 against Lamar on the corner kick, just dropped the shoulder, got done on the inside. João Felix going towards the touchline for the second goal. He's kind of goal side. He drops the shoulder on him again. He's too greedy, wants to steal the ball, gets wrong side. Suddenly one pass in the Griezmann touch and the ball's in the back of the net. That can't happen at that level. So the small underlying, I wouldn't be worried if I was Liverpool supporter. Don't get me wrong, they're in a great place.
You're judging them by high standards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd even go back to that first half against Manchester City at Anfield, in terms of, we've spoken, Joe, about Liverpool, haven't we? Their kind of high intensity, how they can get under the skin of Manchester City. That high intensity game, physicality, run them down, run over them, physically intimidate them. That high energy game, which Manchester City at times find very difficult to live with. Well, that, for majority of that first half against Manchester City, that disappeared.
Klopp blamed his back four in that. He said the back four were dragging defenders close to them and weren't releasing the midfielders to go and press.
No, I'm not sure about that, because I looked at Jordan Henderson. I'm a big fan of Jordan Henderson in terms of his physicality, his legs, his ability to get up and down the pitch, make tackles, run beyond the ball. And I was looking at him first half, a couple of times the ball went beyond him and his recovery speed wasn't great. His head was down running back towards the penalty box, and that's a big worry. Don't get me wrong, Liverpool picked it up second half, all well and good.
And sure, if you're tired or you're fatigued, you'd find it hard to pick it up in the second half. That's why I bought Klopp's explanation.
Yeah, well, anyway, look, I'm not reading too much into it. I think Liverpool are in a very good place. Yes, but I think there's small little things going on there, which would be interesting to have a look at as the season goes
on. Sure. Well, Old Trafford will be interesting Sunday for starters. Football on Off the Ball, by the way, brought to you by Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports. We do have that game live on the radio, Manchester United-Liverpool, 4:30 Sunday. Two substitutions for United. Has Ronaldo been taken off, Kenny? Has he, heck? No chance. Ronaldo stays on. Cavani is on, so he's on the left-hand side where Marcus Rashford was. And then Pogba is on for McTominay. I guess they have to go for it at this stage. So it's 2-1 with, 30 minutes to go in the game? Just under?
Yeah. Well, this is,
20 minutes, excuse me. 20 minutes.
Yeah, again, Cavani, like, look, he's operated. He played like Roy left of a three for PSG a lot of the time when he was there because Ibra was there, wasn't he? In similar situation. Yeah.
He keeps getting screwed. He keeps getting screwed, this fella.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a case of just try and get him on the pitch somewhere. He's a goal threat. He gets into the box. He finds space. He gets on the end of things. You know, does he operate down that wide area as efficiently as Rashford?
Absolutely not. Great save, De Gea. Jeez, who was that was spun?
That was Lindelof. Yeah, it's just Zapata there, just using his body strength there, just kind of rolling him and getting the shot off. Just stuck his leg out. Look, De Gea, big save.
Cavani's going to be trucking up and down that touchline all night, everyone. That's all he's good for, a workhorse. Only one of the great strikers in European football the last 10 years, but that's what he's doing.
Well, I will say, though, Joe, it was a great bit of link-up play there a couple of minutes back, just kind of while we were talking. Yeah. Bruno again and Ronaldo sliding a little clever little reverse pass in behind down the side. Ronaldo taking a force on his left foot, almost fine. It was a really good save.
Yeah,
it's going into the bottom corner. So it's too easy to say, oh, let's get Ronaldo up because of the quality of his performance. Because he's having a decent game.
To be fair, he is. To be fair, he is tonight. It's unfair to say he's not having an impact on the game this evening, and he did score the winner against Villarreal. That's why it's not just flashed over Atalanta. It's not a straightforward, well, Ronaldo's totally rubbish. Do you know what the problem is, Ronaldo? There's a graph where, like, the worth of his genius versus having somebody who's more mobile and harder working. We're reaching that point now where he's not worth having on the field, but there's times where he is worth having on the field as opposed to someone more mobile but not as good. You know, that's what happens at 36.
Yeah. That's a conundrum for
a lot of managers. It's that grey area.
That's a conundrum for a lot of managers. A lot of football clubs on a week-to-week basis, individual players, their individual qualities, you know what I mean?
Decline.
Yeah, and even from game to game, I think that'll maybe change from game to game in terms of the opposition and their qualities as well.
One last one on Madrid last night. Stick in your headphones there for a second. This isn't, an issue of geopolitical importance whatsoever. But at full time, Diego Simeone doesn't shake hands with Jurgen Klopp, runs down the tunnel. And here's what Klopp had to say afterwards. He was asked on BT about this. And so here is Klopp.
Because it was controversial, lots of emotion, no handshakes at the end from Diego. He got away quickly.
Not a colleague, just wanted to wind me up. They don't like that, but the situation is clear. I want to shake his hand. He didn't want it.
Yeah.
So his reaction was for sure not right. Mine was not too cool as well, but we are both emotional. So when I see him next time, we will shake hands definitely, and it's nothing happened. So he was obviously angry, not with me, but with the game, the world, stuff like this, and that's nothing else.
So that was Klopp with Des Kelly. And so it turns out, I hadn't twigged this, Simeone never shakes anyone's hands. It was only Sid Lowe wrote a piece in The Guardian saying, Simeone blanked him. He blanks every manager. And so there's a quote from Simeone: I never shake hands after the game because I don't like it. So he didn't shake Klopp's hand, and I thought, it turns out if you're watching Atletico every week, Simeone out down the back down the tunnel. Let's not bother with that crap.
I've got a lot of respect for that.
I knew you would.
I've got a lot of respect for that, and I'm gonna tell you why. Because irks me more than to see that kind of token gesture politics of managers on the touchline before and after games. Managers who come together with that little powder puff handshake, not even looking at each other in the eye. You know what I mean? I think that's absolutely horrible.
Okay, so if you're going to shake hands,
yeah, mean it.
Do it properly. Otherwise, don't do the old look away.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if you don't like the person for whatever reason, and there's no respect between, why would you shake the hand of somebody you got no respect for?
Mick and Roy shook hands.
Yeah, well, you shake hands if you want, but I've no problem. I'm not going to hang a Diego Simeone out for that reason.
You're giving me daggers for that comment. But when you were talking about shaking hands and looking away, that was the one that came to mind. No, I know what you mean. It's very like, we have to shake hands, so there's no respect in it.
Yeah, no, I think it makes a mockery of the whole thing. No, I've no problem with that whatsoever, got to be honest.
But you've no problem with two managers having a best of luck, good to see you, proper shake hands beforehand. That's okay as well.
No, I'm not big. I'm not even into the pre-match handshake either. I'm not even into the player. I mean, I was never a fan of the handshake prior to the game, like even between players.
It's a nonsense, Joe.
You want to shake somebody's hand?
Harry Maguire. Oh, what a goal. 75 minutes on the clock. Harry Maguire. What's he doing up there?
He should play centre forward.
That was out of nothing. Wow. 15 minutes to go. Manchester United 2, Atalanta 2. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gives a big puff of the cheeks. I'm sorry, we were waffling away about handshakes. So I don't know how this happened, but Maguire was on his own in the penalty area. It was a corner. It had to be. So it's a corner and it's hacked away. And Atalanta have about 7 men in the box. United have no one. We can see Maguire sort of peeling away to the back post here. Nobody's bothered marking him because it's Harry Maguire after all. And it comes through to him. He finishes really well, in fairness to him.
Oh God, it's so sloppy though from Atalanta's point of view. United take an early corner, but they're not set up for it. They've only 2 players in the box. It gets cleared. They're so passive, Atalanta. Allow the next cross to come into the box. I think it's Cavani who tries to flick it on, kind of misses it. Like I said, they have enough defenders back, Atalanta, but it finds its way to Maguire, who's just really walked.
It's not even
a clever little bit of move. He just walked to that back
post area.
Sometimes
the best movement is a standstill.
Yeah. But I tell you what, it was a great finish. He took a first time. It was kind of side foot, just like popped the first time inside the corner. Really clever finish.
No, it really was. Okay, so that's where we are at Old Trafford. 2-2 from 2-0 down. Just to mention before the ad break, we have live commentary of Republic of Ireland against Sweden on Thursday night, which is tomorrow, of course, at Tala Stadium. Kickoff is at 7. We will be live on all our social channels from 5:30, and it's a really good build-up to kickoff as well. There'll be a panel with Ruth Fahey, Emma Byrne, the Pimit manager, James O'Callaghan. There will be a special edition of the Crappy Quiz. 3 of the players volunteered to jump in and do that. So there'll be a Crappy Quiz with the players and an interview with Vera Pau. So brilliant build-up to the game, in fairness, and we're looking forward to it. So it's all thanks to Sky, proud primary partner and supporter of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Football Team. So that's tomorrow, 5:30, 7 o'clock kickoff. We'll take a break.
Who knows more about Munster rugby, me or you, Quinny?
Everyone has an opinion, don't they? Some of the opinions are waffle, but I'd like to think I know a lot.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the rugby channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
Welcome back. 10 minutes to go at Old Trafford. Kenny Cunningham in studio. Joe Malloy with you as well. Bruno Fernandes just had a big chance after some really nice Paul Pogba play. And who has scored? Oh no, Cristiano Ronaldo. That's why he's on the pitch, I suppose. That's why he'll stay on the pitch. Did it against Villarreal, and now he has done it against Atalanta. Header, Kenny, you can talk us through this. So this is the conundrum with Ronaldo. He gives you a lot as well. It's difficult to just totally rip the plaster off.
Oh, it's a brilliant headed goal. It's an aspect of his game. Actually, I think I admire the most, what I enjoy watching the most, just that timing. It's when those crosses come into the box, just that natural spring and just timing and technique. And this was another example of a short corner, get a little 2v1, it gets cleared out to Luke Shaw, patient build up, eventually Shaw gets the ball back, it just puts it into a good area, outswing across into a central area, and it's just a contest. Ronaldo, I don't know who the closest defender is, a Palomino potentially. He was a big lad, but he just, bravery, it's everything. He's up early. He knows potentially he could get whacked there, as you always do in those situations, but he's just totally focused, absolutely total. And the time is absolutely perfect. Doesn't try and do too much on it. There's a bit of pace on the ball, don't get me wrong, but he just punches it. You know, just punches it back across the keeper. It's textbook header, you know, the keeper's creeping across his goal and he punches it back into the corner where he's come from. Absolutely no chance.
I mean, he must be, and it was an unlikely thing to happen for the 17, 18-year-old that first pitched up at Old Trafford, he must be as good a header as there's been in the history of the game.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Must be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And isn't, so, like, this is the issue with Solskjaer. I stand by everything I threw to you at the top of the show about the issues that he creates, but then if you're Solskjaer, it's like, well, look what you get from him at times, and that's why take all the other stuff.
Yeah, so that argument will run a little bit. Funny enough, he drifted out on the left-hand side there prior to that, and Cavani had gone into a more of a central area, but you'd fancy either of them in that situation, probably more so Ronaldo, don't get me wrong, with his heading ability. But just like we were speaking just a few minutes prior to that, Paul Pogba's on the pitch now, obviously, in that central kind of midfield area, and couple of times he's received the ball into his feet in his own half, and they've put the squeeze on him. And you just know if that's McTominay or Fred, the ball's going sideways, yes, or backwards. And you know he has the confidence to have a touch, drop his shoulder, find a little bit of room and make a forward pass and get United going, playing high up the pitch. And that's the difference. Mm. And that's what I'm saying, like the big, you know, the big, not big decision, like for me, we can talk about Cavani, Ronaldo and a couple of different permutations and combinations higher up the pitch. But that midfield axis, you just, this lad has to play. You know? I know there's a lot of debate about him in terms of doesn't potentially turn up for every game and stuff. But again, the pros and cons that we're talking about, yeah, Ronaldo, for me at the moment, what United have in that central midfield, he has to play. Even with those little deficiencies out possession, Joe, in terms of not getting back as quickly as other players, maybe not trusting him in terms of tracking runners, you have to get him into that central area of the pitch and get him on the ball, because he'll get the likes of Bruno Fernandes into the game. He'll get the wingers into the game. He'll pick Ronaldo out. Those little diagonal runs which Ronaldo makes in behind centre-halves, occasionally, which he does do, he'll pick him out. He'll find them with those kind of tracers. So that's been one of the significant differences second half. Just Pogba's contribution in that central area of the pitch just changes the whole dynamic for the team.
Totally agree. It's not like there's nothing in the cons column, but the pros column is stacked pretty high with him. So 3-2 at Old Trafford from being 2-0 down. Villarreal are 2-1 up against Young Boys. Elsewhere, Chelsea, they're 4-0 up now against Malmo. Chelsea, let me click in here and see who scored. It was Christensen who got things started for them, and then Jorginho with a penalty, and then Havertz, and then Jorginho with another penalty.
Oh, that's so, a blow.
No, Lukaku storming off with the 4-0 win, but no go. Juventus and Zenit St. Petersburg is nil all, actually. And Leicester, if you missed it earlier on, 4-3 winners away to Spartak Moscow. Now, just get a brief word for you on the Newcastle situation. These are strange times at Newcastle, so not so much we can say about this, really. But they released a statement, which is just capturing the various odd strands somehow colliding. Newcastle United is kindly asking supporters to refrain from wearing traditional Arabic clothing or Middle East inspired head coverings at matches if they would not ordinarily wear such attire. So what they're talking about here, Kenny, is not people who are genuinely of Arabic descent or wear Middle Eastern clothes in their lives normally. They're talking about Geordies wrapping tea towels around their heads, just in case.
What about Tommy Cooper lookalikes with fedora? With the fez, is it? Fedora fez, is it?
I don't know.
No, that's not welcome either.
I don't actually even, that's gone over my head, that one. But I'll continue with the
fez.
Statement.
Is that kind of North African, is it, I think?
All right, well then
that's where it comes from. That's not allowed either.
Definitely not. So they say,
an upper fence. Well, what's that? Is that incitement? What does that come under these days? Or that?
I don't know. I mean, you can see where they're coming from on this one at the stadium. It is a bit ridiculous. So they say, no one amongst the new ownership group was in any way offended by the attire of the fans who chose to celebrate this way. It was a gesture that was acknowledged as positive and welcoming in its intent. However, there remains the possibility that dressing this way is culturally inappropriate and risks causing offence to others. So
nobody was offended, but it can't happen again.
Yeah, I can see how they realise this isn't a great look going forward. On the Steve Bruce situation, he had negotiated a deal with Mike Ashley whereby in the event of a takeover, and there following that, in the event of his sacking, he gets £7 million. Now, I suspect if Mike Ashley ever had to fire him, he was not getting the £7 million. But after a takeover, sure. Why not, Steve? Take the seven.
It's all about the money.
It sure is.
All about the money.
So look, he took Newcastle to 13th and 12th. I've just two interesting points on this. The next manager I'll come to, but just on Bruce himself, he said to The Telegraph, "I think this is my last job. It has been very, very tough to never really be wanted, to feel that people wanted me to fail and saying I would fail, that I was useless, that I was a fat waste of space, that I was a tactically inept cabbage head." These are quotes. I mean, you can see how this would get in you. He said, "I've always enjoyed the fight, proving people wrong, but that's all it ever seemed to be, a fight, a battle. It does take its toll, because even when you win a game, you don't feel like you're winning over the supporters." And he was saying as well that, you know, even when things were going well, supporters were like, "Well, yeah, fine, but the style of football is not good enough." He couldn't win with them. It took its toll. I think you could see that in his body language of late. And that's Steve Bruce, thoroughly fed up with the whole thing. So he reckons he's done. Who knows? You were saying years time you feel better about things, but it does seem like he had a rotten time. Who takes over a club like Newcastle now is also the interesting question. So give us your thoughts on Bruce, and then who takes over a relegation threatened side with ambitions to win the Champions League?
I think there's a huge list of managers who'd be interested in that job just because of the potential that's there. We know it's all about the money, isn't it? It's a war chest of funds available for the next manager who goes in. So I don't think every manager. I think the likes of so I'd be a huge fan of Antonio Conte because timing's everything in football. Managers, who's available, who can we get? People say, "Oh, go and get the top managers," but the reality is, some managers would be very difficult to get at this moment of time for obvious reasons. The top managers, say for example, you're not going to get Klopp, you're not going to get Guardiola, Tuchel, whoever it is. You know, Ancelotti's not going to take that job. It's just time, and those type of people don't walk out. You know, don't walk out kind of mid-season, those kind of circumstances. So who hasn't got a job? Somebody of real kind of stature and a real kind of quality who you'd consider an elite coach stroke manager. And for me, it's Conte's the only one out there. Would he actually be interested in this venture? I'm not actually sure if he would, because he's probably thinking, he's looking at his own CV in terms of and potentially what he can achieve there in a very short period. He's probably thinking that's a 3-4 year job before Newcastle realistically could maybe challenge for the Premiership, let alone kind of a Champions League. Do I really want to kind of invest that much time there over the next 3 or 4 year period? Maybe not. So I don't even think Antonio. For me, I'd go big on Conte at the moment to say, look, there's a four year contract. Yeah, we know where we are at the moment. There's going to be funds there available in January, and obviously going forward, absolutely as much money as you want. And you've got total responsibility in terms of the football club, the playing squad, putting the team together, your support staff, the whole thing. That must be attractive to any manager, even a top level manager. I mean, that kind of, you know, that going into that kind of environment, that doesn't happen. That's a once in a lifetime for a manager to go into a situation like that. It must be very challenging to challenge yourself to go into a club which is where they are at the moment, the bottom end of the Premiership, and actually turn the whole thing around, albeit it's going to take you a little bit of time. But that must be like, there can't be a better feeling in the world to go in at the moment at Newcastle, turn the whole thing around, and by the time you leave, you know, you're talking about Newcastle as one of the biggest clubs in the world, a successful club, a title winning club, you know, successful in Europe, that type of thing. I mean, that must be hugely challenging, like for a number of managers. But Conte is the only one I can see. Other managers will jump at it. Yeah, I mean, there's managers out there, you'll give them a 1 year contract, they'll take it.
We've seen Paulo Fonseca has been linked with it, former Roma, Shakhtar Donetsk manager, out of work at 48, and then a bunch of the usual names. I don't know if they're genuinely linked or if it's just plucked their names out of the sky. So the likes of Roberto Martinez, Lampard's been mentioned, Gerrard's been mentioned, Eddie Howe's been mentioned, those types. I mean, how, in terms of time frame, before they're qualifying for Champions League, so they have to survive relegation this year, they get January transfer window, who knows what they can do there, I don't know. They get a good summer. Is one good summer enough? Well, say one extraordinary summer enough to get them to Champions League. So it'd be 2 years minimum before you're Champions League.
Yeah, I'd be thinking 2 years minimum, probably realistically even three to be honest with you. Yeah, so.
So that's like, if I'm Conte, I'm like, come back to me in three. I'm saying come back to me in three.
No, but this is like standalone stuff, isn't it? I mean, he could go, he could sit there, Conte, he could wait for another 6 months. Who knows? Maybe the Barcelona job might become available. Koeman potentially could be gone in a year. Is Conte realistically thinking, I could get the Barcelona job? Maybe he could. Maybe he could go there and enjoy a little bit of success, although they're in a difficult place at the moment. But is he going to be revered there if he goes and wins a cup at Barcelona or gets into Champions League football or has a little bit of a run or whatever? Is he going to be remembered amongst the greats at Barcelona?
If he turns them around at the moment, he might be.
Yeah, possibly so. But the likes of Guardiola and some of the Cruyff and the great names that they've had. There's an opportunity there for managers to go in Newcastle and turn the whole thing around, become an absolute...
Of a statue.
Yeah, absolute like legend. You know, something which hasn't been replicated. I'm trying to think outside of England, even in terms of PSG, maybe to an extent, in terms of... You wouldn't say PSG were operating at the... You know, the basement level of French football. Like, it's difficult to see another analogy in terms of Newcastle.
I guess Man City to an extent, given they were so low when the money poured in. But yeah, no, I take your point. Yeah,
so that must be an amazing opportunity. I mean, Conte must be looking at that thing. If the phone rang, he must be seriously
Conte, and you have to give me a one word answer because I have to go to the ads. You're going to get the word that in a month's time, you can go Newcastle or you can go Manchester United. Who?
No, I think he goes Manchester.
Yeah, so do I.
He goes Manchester United. I think you're probably right. I think he waits, he sits and he waits for that big that big, big job big to come clubs. The next 6 months to a year.
Yeah, this was the Football Show and Off the Ball, brought to you by Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky, BT Sports and Premier Sports. Tomorrow night we'll have commentary of Republic of Ireland against Sweden. 5:30 is when the build-up starts. John Giles on the show as well. Tomorrow morning, OTBAM. Michael Verney co-hosting with Jer, so I'm sure lots of talking. Henry Shefflin, Andy Mitten will be on talking about events at Old Trafford this evening. Kenny, we've about a minute. Sum this up. They're never dull, Manchester United. So
No.
It's hard to know what tonight means.
No, but credit where credit's due. We're talking about the kind of little bit of inconsistencies in their play and the little areas where they need to improve and the conundrums in the within the squad. But let's not forget about some of the quality which they have, particularly in the attacking areas of the pitch. And when they kind of get it going, and when they get players kind of working in tandem and get some of those combinations going, and even the energy, when they get that energy into their play, into their attacking play, even the kind of the crowd got involved there second half, they're a real threat. I mean, they scored 3 goals, could have had a couple of more, could have lost a couple of goals as well the other end. It's that little bit of mayhem at the moment, but I don't think it's such a bad thing. As long as they got that, those that were talking about, like, if you're going to go down fighting for me. I think that this is the way they have to go, United, in terms of Pogba on the pitch. Second half gives them a totally new, different dimension. They look as if they scored 3 goals. They could have had more. Could he conceded more? Yeah, absolutely. But that's the way it is at the moment. They can't really shut up shop for me. Get on the front foot and just get at teams.
Thanks for coming in.
No problem.